Accession number 27202, Colonel James Dowson, Reel 5. Now, we were talking about when you went to the Shaftesbury Military Hospital in July 1949, and your first impression...
Must have been early July, because I'll tell you why. When the first day I got there, there was a trip in a bus, and I went on this trip, and it went to Mere. And in Mere, the rhododendrons are in bloom.
Now, tell us about the accommodation.
Right. I got to the accommodation and found that there were some old VAD quarters that were occupied by REMC. And they were rather splendid. I mean, there were two double rooms, so that I just had one other person in the room with me, and it was a Welsh chap, I think it was, and he'd been there for some time, so he had a radio and a gramophone and things like that. So we really had quite a reasonable life, civilized as opposed to organized, and ordered by ourselves, and washrooms and so on, quite different from the regimented and barrack style stuff that had come from. So it was a great relief.
Now, you were a nursing orderly.
Nursing orderly class 3.
And what was your day, typical day? You said it was a working day. What was your working day?
Well, we'd start at probably 7 o'clock in the morning. And the first thing that had to be done was to minister to all the breakfast and things like that for all the patients. The ward would be full, and nearly always was full, and these would be minor surgical and sometimes major surgical things, and you would go around feeding them and washing them, cleaning them, feeding them, then washing them, cleaning them, and then cleaning the ward, and then matron would come round and inspect. And the nursing staff, the nursing sisters, were QARENC, Queen Alexandra's Royal Army Nursing Corps, which used to be called the Queen Alexandra's Imperial Military Nursing Corps, which gave a tremendous opportunity for the REMC to turn it into a rather rude acronym. So they changed that. At least I don't think that was the reason they changed it. Anyway, they were in charge of us. We were the REMC. They were a different corps and a different level of society. And matron would come round and make sure that the patients were all right, and the RSM wardmaster would come round and make sure the ward was all right, and then we'd get on with dressings and so on. And
how did you get on with the matrons? I mean, obviously it's a military relationship, but I mean, how did they treat you?
Well, they were very, very civilised. I mean, they were stern, but they were no sterner than they would be in a civilian hospital, I think. Distant, severe, very high, demanding a very high standard, expecting it, criticising it when it fell below standard, making sure you just kept on with your work. But the standard of work they required wasn't impossible. Unlike barracks, where it was, up to the point of ridiculous detail, like cleaning behind window catches and so on, this just had to be clean and decent and normal common sense standard of cleanliness.
Now, how were the patients treated? They were soldiers.
They were soldiers, that's right.
And how were they treated by you and by the matrons? I mean, were they treated more as patients and soldiers, or more as soldiers and patients? I mean,
it's hard to say. You see, one's living in an atmosphere where you're all in it together. And the soldiers were just national servicemen like myself. So the sort of questions that went round were standard questions. They were soldiers that came in for everything from fractured limbs to circumcision, they were treated appropriately as patients in the usual way that patients were in those days. But at the same time, they were soldiers, and they would certainly talk to us as we would talk to them. and the sort of questions that you ask would be where you're from and how long, you know, what's your group number? You know what a group number is, do you?
Right, explain it for them, because they might not know.
And this group number was your discharge group, which you were given on entry. And mine, easy to remember, was 252, which is the same as the military charge of, what is it? Good order and military discipline. Contravention of good order and military discipline. 252. And, of course, you were very reluctant to reveal this. It was a bit of a kind of game of one-upmanship. So that they would ask you what your group was, and you would hesitate and realize that perhaps you'd been a little bit upstage, because you ought to have tried to get some idea of what his group number was before you revealed yours, so that then you could taunt him with "get some in," which was the standard reply if their group number was higher than yours. So even 253 would be taunted with "get some in" by me.
So that would mean February 52 was your, was it, or did,
No, 25, it was just a number. It seemed to be an arbitrary number.
Yeah. Didn't
it was just
relate to anything.
In serial things. And 252, I was due to go out in October 1950, so it had no relation to the month as far as I know. And 253 was another fortnight later. It was all done fortnightly groups, as far as I remember. They came in fortnightly, National Servicemen. That was one of the standard topics of conversation, an opener. And then you get to know people, where they were from and what unit they were in and so on. And they would talk about their experiences. And
so how long would you work through on a typical day? You'd work just...
Well, there was you actually worked an eight-hour day, but it was done in shifts, so that you'd 7 o'clock in the morning, you could go right through until, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, then you were off. Or you could be split and do 4 hours on and then 3 hours off and another 4 hours on. And I haven't worked out the details, but you'd be able to see that it worked out so that the night shift actually came on at 7 o'clock in the evening and worked straight through to 7 o'clock in the morning. So they did a 12-hour shift. But we did split. We did 8-hour shifts for the remaining, and it was split up, so that you sometimes had an afternoon off and sometimes had to go back on duty again.
Now, you seem to have enjoyed it. Well,
very shortly after I started at Shaftesbury Military Hospital, again, I, without consciously doing it, I drew attention to myself and got questioned by the medical officers, Major Simon, who was a surgeon, and said, what would you like to do? And I said, I'd like to work in the operating theatre. So I was then whisked off to the operating theatre.
Now, as an orderly and...
And operating.
Now, what was that? What did that entail?
Oh, well, that entailed working in the theatre and making, you know, it was... I think rather more strenuous shifts, but it didn't rather less cleaning of wards and so on. You had to clean the theatre out and make sure that all the various trays and dressings and trolleys were set up for surgical operations. So you learned the names of all the instruments, and you learned how many forceps and scissors and so on went out for an appendicectomy and so on. So you learned all these operating trays.
And would you boil them up?
Or? Yes, all boiled. Or some were autoclaved. The linen was autoclaved.
Autoclaved,
yeah. Well, that was a high-pressure steam sterilisation. They were done in drums, and you'd pack these drums with dressings and other things. And there were various techniques, and there were round drums, and they had a kind of thing like a, you know, these spring-form cake things. They had that on the side, but you'd open it and there would be little vents open, and then you put them in the autoclave and autoclave them for the appropriate period of time and take them out and close the thing, and then they would be sealed until and opened as sterile. So autoclaving and setting trolleys and trays for And then, as you worked your way up through competence and so on, you could actually get to holding things and gazing at operations, which is great fun.
Did you have any, I mean, there's always these jokes about people the first time fainting in operation. Did you have any trouble with
No,
that?
I'll tell you why, because I'd already been in to see surgical operations at the Royal Infirmary in Sunderland. My father's brother, my uncle Bill, was, after the end of the war, worked as a plaster technician in the fracture clinic at the Royal Infirmary in Sunderland, and I used to go along there to watch him at work. And the surgeon, the orthopedic surgeon, Mr. Brown, got to know that I was wanting to do medicine, and I was allowed in to see him work on various fractures, which at that time they were often put in plaster, and you would take the plaster off and there would be granulating wounds underneath and so on, which caused me to feel a bit dizzy. But I got used to that. So by the time I went to theatre in Shaftesbury, there was no problem at all.
Anything happened that you recall from that period? You know, we were sort of established a routine. Anything untoward or unusual?
Well, once I got there, almost the first information I was given was that Shaftesbury Military Hospital was closing and moving. This is a story of my national service, really. Everywhere I was posted to, it seemed they were closing down. So Shaftesbury Military Hospital in Dorset, which is in a lovely part of the country, duly closed. And then the marvellous accommodation, this XVAD accommodation, it all vanished. And I went to the Wheatley Military Hospital in Oxford.
Now, what, do you know what month that would be, roughly?
No, it didn't seem to be winter. So it would be the same year, towards the autumn, I think. Because it closed quite quickly.
So around about August or October? Sorry. September.
October, more likely to be October, I think.
And so how did the Wheatley Military Hospital at Oxford compare?
That was a hospital for head injuries and nervous conditions, and also dermatology. I was taken out of theatre then and went to work in the skin ward, dermatology ward.
Now, what did that
mainly mean? Because there were no vacancies. And dermatology I found really quite fascinating because there were lots of things to see, and treatment at that time didn't involve any steroids, which have transformed dermatology. And lots of rather almost medieval sounding pastes and unguents that you put on people, tar and half strength coal tar and Lassar's paste and ichthyol paste and so on, all made from ground up fish bones and other kinds of weird substances. It was really quite.
Now, what were the common types of skin complaint you were facing there? Because I presume it's not acne or something like that.
No. There were some cases of acne, of course. Psoriasis, which is a very common skin condition, that was treated with coal tar. There was just a minute, I'm sorry, I've made a mistake. I didn't go from Shaftesbury Military Hospital to Wheatley. I went to the School of Infantry in Warminster.
We'll drop that in at later then. We'll finish Wheatley first, I think.
Right. At Wheatley, there was psoriasis. There would be impetigo.
How was that treated?
Well, that was treated with gentian violet, a bright purple dye that killed organisms and made them look amazing. I mean, you paint these people bright purple on the bits that were otherwise livid scarlet, and it would blacken the dead bits of skin, so that you imagine these multicoloured people. But they got better. Impetigo was at erysipelas, and that was rather more serious. That had to be treated with erysipelas is where, instead of being on the surface, it's in the substance of the skin, the infection, and they had to be treated with antibiotics. which at that time we used penicillin, streptomycin was just being introduced, and penicillin was looked like a sort of thick brown brew when you made a solution of it from the powder, and we treated people that way. But mostly it consisted of putting these various alchemical pastes on and occlusive dressings, and that's quite skillful. You would put people on with face masks, and a face mask was something where almost everybody will get it wrong until they're taught the technique. Inevitably, when you make a face mask without being instructed on how to do so, you end up with the eye holes there.
Further round.
Too far round. They've got to be very close together. And also the nose is usually too low, and the mouth down here somewhere. So you always make a face too big until you've been taught how to do it. And then when you're taught how to do it, you learn to get a great deal of skill in making it comfortable for the poor unfortunate who has to wear it.
Now, why would they have to wear it?
Well, they had to wear it because these pastes had to be applied to the afflicted area, and they wouldn't stay on unless they had some occlusive dressing on it. You couldn't, they were not absorbed, they were just applied. And so you'd have these face masks, and you'd have long stockings on arms and legs with mittens and so on. Really quite a certain amount of skill and a certain amount of satisfaction in getting it right. So that, engaged my attention quite a lot.
Were things like ringworm and scabies still
going
around?
Yes, they were around. Scabies in particular was common enough. And ringworm, which was easy enough to diagnose because we had a thing called a Wood's light. It's an ultraviolet rich light, and the fungus itself glows bright in this light. So you could not only could you tell whether it was there, you could tell when you were better just by shining this Wood's light on.
And you weren't squeamish about skin diseases?
No. I wasn't squeamish about anything.
Was there a risk of infection? I mean, some of these things are.
It never occurred to me that I was under any great risk. I suppose I was protected by two major things. One is my age, and being youth, you always think that you're immortal and invincible. And the other was that I felt that I had, not consciously, felt that I had enough intelligence and common sense to apply that to the amount of caution needed. So it was never any, it never crossed my conscious mind that I had to take any special care. It always seemed to me to be commonsensical.
Anything, how long were you at Wheatley? we're going to come back to Warminster.
Until it closed.
And when did it close? I mean,
That must have been towards the, and let's see now.
You went there when? Because it wouldn't be October then.
That'd be when you
went to Warminster. We'll come back.
No, that would be in the opening part of the following year. Let's see, when did the war in Korea start?
I'm not sure of the date, but early 50.
49, 50. It was June, July 1950. Okay, it must have been early 1950 that I went. April 49... I went to Queen Elizabeth Barracks. Late summer, midsummer, 49, went to Shaftesbury and Dorset, then to the School of Infantry in Warminster, and then from Warminster to Wheatley Military Hospital in Oxford, which must have been in the spring of the year. I can remember also that having gone from... they didn't really have a job for me, so I had things like night ward master, which is
at Wheatley.
At Wheatley, and I can.
What was night ward master then?
Well, you just had to do the administrative bits of admitting patients who came during the night, and tot up the bed state and render it to the next guy, who took on as the daily ward master, who was the kind of maitre d' of the entire hospital. And report any incidents that happened and he should know about or were continuing to happen and should deal with.
What kind of incident? Or did nothing ever happen?
Nothing very much happened. But there'd be people who became seriously ill, and they'd have to inform relatives and things like that. And people have died, and the number of people who were admitted and where they'd gone. So all of these would have to have ongoing administrative dealings with that chap who really administered the hospital was during the day. Yeah. And I remember also that the reason I mentioned night wardmaster is that you could, there were lots of times when there was nothing to do and you could stand and look outside the hospital at the bushes and see the fireflies in the bushes. That's the first time I'd seen fireflies. It was really rather fascinating.
Now, how would people manage to die from skin diseases?
And it wasn't all skin disease. These, in Wheatley Military Hospital, people would have serious head injuries. And
Did you have much to do with the head injury
no.
side of things? But that's where the fatalities would come.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Were these... They weren't mental cases. These were people with head wounds.
Yes,
or
head wounds.
Injuries.
Yes, head wounds or injuries. But none of them in... Well, some were legacies of conflict. I remember the RSM from Sandhurst was there, and he'd had a serious head injury during war and wasn't really very well. He kept coming to have various assessments. And there were new head injuries of people always falling out of tanks or under tanks and so on. There was plenty of activity going on that resulted in injury.
Now, you were there roughly from, spring is April? April 50?
I was there until, maybe after June 1950, because that's when the Korean War broke out. But I was then posted from Wheatley Military Hospital to Hindhead in Surrey.
Now, that would be when, roughly? July?
Around about then.
These are only approximate dates. I
continued dermatology there.
I'll come back to that, because we've got to drop in the... So you were there about 3 months?
I think so, yes.
Okay. Now, let's
That was where I first learned how to... first discovered what it was like to get drunk.
Tell us that, then, before we leave it.
Well, I was friends with two laboratory assistants. And they introduced me to something which they'd made themselves, which consisted of laboratory alcohol, ethyl alcohol, and orange essence of some sort. So they made their own artificial Cointreau. They sweetened it, and it was extremely powerful stuff. And that was the first time that I can recollect waking up and not believing that I could endure the pain that was in my head. or to believe that my hands could tremble quite so much.
Did it put you off?
Only for a short while. As usual, the usual sort of thing.
Did you then start drinking more conventional drinks? Or?
Yes, I then started social drinking, I suppose, and realizing that not much, mind you, but some. Never, I hadn't acquired a taste for beer. I found that ardent spirits were more to my liking, because it got that sensation that I suddenly found that I could, was desirable. I got that sensation very quickly.
Now, the other post, the one we missed, we're going to go back to it now, which is you were at...
School of Infantry, Warminster, yes. Now, I don't know how I managed to be posted there. I think it was just told you're going as a... Oh, wait a minute, no, there's more than that. Regular Commissions Board. How did it... Yes. From Shaftesbury, I went to Westbury as a corporal... in charge of the sick room at the Regular Commissions Board in West Spring, Wiltshire.
Now, what did that involve?
I just realised that it might, in fact, be the other way around.
We'll have to settle one way or the other, because
we get
entangled now. So we're going to have to go this way. You know, correct.
All right, then. I'll tell you about this. The Regular Commissions Board, I was just there on my own, and I stuck plasters on... aspirant officers who injured themselves on these silly tasks that they got done, that I described to you earlier about logs of wood that were too short and ropes that were too long. The tasks were all very similar, and the various people that were there, I made friends with the sergeants who were assessing these people, and we discussed things like socialism and truth and all sorts of things that I hadn't discussed with anybody for a long time, and all terribly important.
So this was a fairly pleasant.
Yes, it was pleasant. There was a sergeant's mess waiter, who was the only sergeant's mess waiter, who wanted desperately to go on leave, and so I substituted for him for a while. Didn't like that very much.
Why not?
Well, it was too subservient for me. I didn't like the idea of my people that I felt superior to sitting down asking to be waited on by me. The fortnight was about as long as I could endure, but at least he was allowed to be go out on leave.
Now, you were a corporal. How did you find being corporal? I mean,
it just meant more pay, that's all.
Mm. And you're not quite sure when this was. Would this be
after? I am now. Right.
Was this in 51 then? Or
No, 51, I was out of the army.
1950s.
I think that I can tell you definitively now, my memory having been refreshed, it was first Shaftesbury Military Hospital in Dorset, second Regular Commissions Board at Westbury in Wiltshire, third School of Infantry Warminster, and then Wheatley Military Hospital Oxford, and lastly Hindhead in Surrey. That's now the order of my postings.
Now tell me about the School of Infantry at Warminster.
Well, there was
you were a corporal then.
I was a corporal then, and I was put in charge of the, I forgot what it's called, sick room of some sort. It was a separate building right at the front of the School of Infantry. The School of Infantry was approached by a long avenue, and on the left of this was a building which was a kind of sick bay with a few beds, run by two medical officers and a dental centre adjoining. And I went there as corporal in charge, and having previously told you that my powers of leadership were zero, or almost a negative quantity, I didn't do all that well there.
Why not? What problems did you have?
Well, I managed all right with the work, but it was handling people. I'm just very poor at handling people. And that went both ways, so that Dr. Mee, Captain Mee, no, G, Captain G, he didn't like me very much. And there was Captain Baird, or Beard, who was the other medical officer. He did, but Captain G...
Now, why didn't he like him? I mean, why did one like him?
Because I argued with him.
What about? What sort of thing?
Well, he would accuse me of not doing things the way he wanted, and I would sort of offer alternatives that I thought were just as good, or you know, that sort of thing. And not in terms of medical management, but sort of actual administration of the day-to-day tasks. And so he was quite glad to see the back of me, I think, when I was posted, and I'll tell you about that later.
And what about the people below you, in other words, the privates?
Well, I got on quite well with them. There was a chap from who'd been in the Sherwood Foresters. He was a spotty lad who was, easy to get on with. I've forgotten what he did for a living. And there was another chap who was in the Scottish Regiment. I don't think it was the Black... I think it was Gordon Highlanders. And he was from Grimsby. and he'd been a railway fireman before he did his national service. And he was full of anecdotes of life on the railways, which is all I remember about it.